knife is here. I don't know that song.
Me neither.
But I know the band.
Well, sort of.
It's... And I'm I know the band because they were around when I was in college and working at the radio station in college. Mm-hmm. And we got the records in.
Yeah.
We just never played them.
Actually, I'm not even sure what it is we're looking at here. So
we're going to talk to our guest, and he's going to tell us what it is.
Okay, fine. Well, why don't you explain who you are and what the show is?
My name is Dave White. I'm the film critic for Movies.com. That's right. I'm the film critic for Movies.com. And you are Alonzo Duralde. You are the film critic for TheWrap.com and also for the internet television program of movie reviews called What the Flick.
Correct.
And we have a guest.
We do.
This week. He is based on the video game from Capcom. His name is Mark Oick.
Welcome to the show, sir.
Thank you. I always pictured myself more as being a distaff cousin of Captain Harlock from Galaxy Express 999, but...
That's more esoteric than being a thing related to Resident Evil Retribution.
Or you could be based on the paperback from Ballantine Books.
And perhaps. So that's better. Yours is better than mine.
Original soundtrack available on RSO Records.
Here's what's great about Mark Oick. He brought a cassette of his own to be our opening music. And it's by 80s indie band Death of Samantha.
From Cleveland, Ohio.
On Homestead Records. Okay. The late lamented Homestead Records.
Okay, because I saw...
That eventually became Matador Records.
I saw some Ray Davis cassette floating around. I thought that's what we were listening to.
So. Well, no, that was a gift for the house.
Yes, that's our present. Ooh. For us.
Actually, and presents. I have another, because we're both approximately the same age, so I figure you would appreciate these. What the audience cannot see is I have given Alonzo a pair of... Fun Money coins from Burger Chef.
Oh my gosh, yes. With Burgerilla and Fangburger. Nice. Yes, Burger Chef and Jeff were idols of mine as a child. So. Although I think I've seen the real life equivalent of Jeff would be that teen chef they trotted out on the Great Food Truck Race last week.
The kid that did nothing but sit there and smile. I think that's a great idea.
And eat waffles, yeah.
Well, but was he as jittery as Jeff was?
Only after eating all the samples, I think. The sugar kicked in.
Oh, pompous pupusias, Burger Chef.
So, Mark, you may know on a national basis as the one-time movie geek from the hit Comedy Central game show Beat the Geeks.
I have to contradict the notion that it was a hit. Well. If it had been, I might still have a career in television.
I know, but yeah, I always loved when people would go on TV shows and they would talk about their hit single that hadn't come out yet, you know, so I just figure hit is a word you insert.
Well, in that case, yes, because we don't, movies don't have hit singles anymore, which truly saddens me.
Mm-hmm. You're right. But you are also the blogmeister of The Projector Has Been Drinking, is that what it's called?
That's correct.
Okay, so and where can folks find that?
Projectorhasbeendrinking.blogspot.com.
Excellent, so check that out. And you can also follow Mark on Twitter at The
Projector or Projectionist? It's Projector.
It's The Projector.
It's The Projector, that's right. See,
it's right. A Tom Waits poem.
Poetic license, Dave.
Yes, that's right.
You can also follow Mr. Hoick at Twitter at @THE_HOYK. At The Hoick. And so, yes, he's joining us this week to talk about are we going to call this the opening week of the actual fall movie season? Like,
yeah.
Like a movie that might get Oscar consideration has now opened. So yeah. It's on.
Oh, it will. It will get Oscar consideration.
Oh.
There's no doubt that it will.
Right.
I mean, didn't they nominate There Will Be Blood for a lot of Oscars?
They did. Mm-hmm. They
did it win any?
Daniel Day-Lewis
won.
He won?
Yeah. Yeah.
See, I don't remember anything. Yeah. Oscars, they happen. I look at them while they're happening. And the next day, if you ask me what happened on the Oscars last night, I would say, I cannot tell you. I don't remember.
It'll last me a couple of weeks. But definitely, like, by that fall, I'm like, who got supporting actress? I don't remember. So, yeah, it's that sort of thing.
Yeah, I used to be better at that sort of thing, but sometimes I need prompting as well.
Sure. Well, you know, and you at least had, trivia was your business, you know. So, yeah, so we're talking about Paul Thomas Anderson's The Master, which opened in New York and L.A. this week and will soon be expanding to other cities. And with any
is
luck...
Is it going to expand, like, a lot this coming week?
I think so. And with any luck, it will expand to your city in 70 millimeter, which is totally...
That's unlikely, though, right?
Well, I think there are still cities left out there.
Unless you live in a place that's got an old movie theater... You know, that has that capacity.
Well, the Weinsteins are spending some money to get the 70 prints out there.
Really?
So,
huh, okay.
Because I know that as far as L.A. goes, the Cinerama Dome was already outfitted for 70, but they sprung to have another 70 unit brought in for another house at Arclight and for a house at the Landmark.
Mm. Oh, that's nice.
Yeah. And just shipping an actual 70 print is already, you know, like no cheap venture. I remember I saw one once in Dallas when the last 70 millimeter film in wide release, which was Kenneth Branagh's Hamlet, which for some reason in Dallas they had a 70 millimeter press screening and then opened it in 35. Go figure. But anyway, I saw
Dallas.
Yeah, I know. But I saw the 70 print like in the theater when it was waiting to be shipped out, and it was a lot of containers. It was a big thing.
I have seen that print. I went to the Neon Movies in Dayton back in, I think, 97 when they were doing their Cinerama installation as like their last hurrah before the place got twinned. And they had just come off of playing the 70 print of Hamlet, and they still had the print in the lobby because it was too big to just keep in the office.
It was that or the projector in the booth. You couldn't have both.
So, I'm wondering, what about all those multiplexes now, though, that have gone
all
like,
digital?
All digital. What are they
doing? They will screen it digital. In fact, I heard opening day at the Arclight that the motor went out in one of the 70 projector in House 3, and they had to finish the movie in digital. So, oops. And it's not the end of the world if you don't see it in 70, but if the option is there, even if it requires a bit of a drive or it costs more or whatever, go see this movie.
Even if
in
you 70. Have to drive to Chino, like you're going to go see the Nicolas Cage movie, Stolen.
Which did not bother to open in the greater metropolitan Los Angeles area.
There is a new
Nicolas
Cage movie that's out this weekend that we are not talking about because that movie...
required a trek.
First of all, they did not screen it for critics, but that never, you know, stops us.
What, a Nicolas Cage movie?
We saw Oogie Loves in the theater. but they did not only not screen this for critics, they didn't even open it on more than two screens in all of California.
Southern California?
California. Okay. And those two screens, one's in Chino, which is 50% of the way to Palm Springs.
Mm-hmm.
The other's in Moreno Valley, which is 57% of the way to Palm Springs. And so, like, there's a hotbed of Nicolas Cage fannery going on.
In the desert.
In the desert between here and Palm Springs.
Well, reportedly from my friends on Facebook who did make the trek, they said that the Friday matinee shows they went to were unusually busy for a matinee, and I said, well, that's because suburbanites still understand that Nicolas Cage is a movie star.
Right.
You know, they're not as jaded as we Angelenos are. It's like, oh, what? Another Nicolas Cage movie? How long has it been? 5 days?
Well, maybe it was just packed with film critics from the LA area.
Possibly.
Who, you know, it was like,
I mean, I would have gladly gone to see it had they treated me with a little respect and opened it at, you know, the Chinese Six, or the Grove, or even some cruddy theater in maybe Burbank 16.
Okay,
we
drove to Orange County to see Left Behind.
That
the
was
movie.
Different. That's different. That was Left Behind the movie. The same way that you and I are going to go see Last Ounce of Courage this week. We're going
to
make that drive
only
too.
If we're paying to see something else and sneaking in
whatever.
Last Ounce.
Yeah,
of
this
courage.
Is crazy. Crazy.
It's from the distributor that brought you 2016 Obama's America.
Ooh, excellent.
Yeah.
And standing ovation.
Really?
Rocky Mountain was the initial distributor for standing ovation.
I'm so excited to go see this. Okay, getting back to The Master.
Yes, let's.
It's fantastic.
Yeah. Yes. Well, yeah, I don't like it as much as you do, but I do think it's
Boy, then you're wrong.
No, you are. I can't fault the craftsmanship, certainly. It is it's beautifully shot. Again, if you can see it in 70, it's so worth it for what it does for the lighting and the shadow and the amazing close-ups on the two lead actors. I mean, just it's a movie that looks really great. Johnny Greenwood of Radiohead has composed an extraordinary score. The performances are all really good. It looks, I mean, like the period detail and the production design are all exquisite. I just still find myself at kind of an emotional remove from it. I think mainly because you're dealing with sort of two characters who are spinning wildly in their own orbits. And so I guess I wanted one of them to be sort of an anchor for this movie. So instead, I felt like it's veering off in two crazy directions, and I didn't know how to feel about it or who to follow, or it sort of left me kind of cold. But at the same time, I did find both performances really good, and I did find both characters really interesting. I just thought that maybe they should have each gotten their own movie. Stop making that face.
Did you need me to explain things to you and hold your hand so that your feelings could be, you know, guided more efficiently?
Yeah, Dave White. I don't understand cinema at all unless you're there to provide your cliff notes because you're so smart.
Look, I'm an idiot, but I'm not stupid. Mm. So, yeah.
And just because I'm from Ohio doesn't mean I'm from Ohio. So,
yeah.
I don't know. I just found it so emotionally disengaging because both of these characters were so bizarre in their own ways that, you know, I think if it had been about one or about the other one, fine. But the two of them together and sort of bouncing off and not bouncing off each other, by the time it was over, I kind of felt like, yeah, and, you know, I don't know.
If you don't know what it's about at all.
It is loosely based on the rise of L. Ron Hubbard and Dianetics and Scientology, which is here known as The Cause. And Philip Seymour Hoffman plays a guy named Lancaster Dodd. Although, really, the movie's not about him nearly as much as it's about Joaquin Phoenix as Freddy, who is this severely damaged World War II veteran. You get the impression he was severely damaged going in, mm-hmm. although, you know, certainly going to war didn't help. This is a guy, like, to call him an alcoholic would be an understatement. I mean, he drinks out of containers that have skulls and crossbones on them. He makes hooch out of, like, industrial stuff. You know, he swigs
solvents.
Yeah, things, exactly. Yeah. And so when he crosses paths with Lancaster Dodd, you know,
the only way is up, really.
Kind of, yeah. And for a while, he sort of becomes he's sort of Lancaster Dodd's id. You know, like he's the one who will actually, like, you know, somebody will question Dodd's methods or his theories, and Dodd will just get mad at him, and Freddie will go and, you know, knock his teeth out, basically.
As I said in my review on movies.com, that he's the goon.
Yeah, he's
for the organization.
Exactly.
He gets in the fights.
He's the muscle
for the boss man.
Yeah. But again, and we, Dave and I, by the way, were on the B Movies podcast this week, which you should check out, and we talked about the film there as well.
What, and say many of the same things exactly, that we're saying
yes,
now.
I know.
So
enjoy them again.
Yes.
But my what I couldn't help feeling at it when it was over was that, I mean, you see how his time with Dodd actually sort of helps Freddy to a certain extent and allows him to cope with things in his life or address them or whatever. I didn't get where Dodd's life had been changed at all from Freddy having been in it.
Well, I think that's kind of the point of the movie, is that I saw it Thursday at midnight with my friend, the incredible musician Chris Price, who just started his own blog now called Which Way Is Awesome.
Midnight.
Yeah, 12...
2.5 hour movie.
2:17. It's shorter than There Will Be Blood.
We're maniacs that way. And we discussed it thoroughly, and he went and saw it a second time and wrote a great piece about it. But we both determined that it was... You know, Freddie's time in The Cause is just, you know, putting all of his mania in a different direction, and it's not changing a damn thing. You know, that he is... All it's doing is providing some sort of structure. Chris has the awesome, he has the awesome idea that this movie should be played on a double bill with either Rise of the Planet of the Apes or Project Nim, because both movies are about trying to tame an animal and the futility and failure of that task.
But okay, and not to get into spoiler territory here, but when Freddy returns to his hometown, didn't that scene kind of give you the idea that he was sort of ready to address stuff that he had done in the past and maybe kind of put it behind him and put it in a place where it was something that he could now deal with? That's what, I mean, I saw it twice before reviewing it as well, because the first time I was sort of like, hey, is it, but I wasn't. Anyway, so, but seeing that again, that scene to me kind of feels like it was the sort of first proactive step he takes in the entire movie. The first sort of mature act of like, okay, well, this happened, and this happened in the past, and now I realize that it is over, and there's nothing else that can be done about it, and I'm going to carry on.
Well, I suppose so, except that when I saw that moment, I didn't think that it was a closure moment. I thought it was a continuance moment.
Hmm.
Yeah, the idea of perhaps trying to come from a better position in terms of mental and socioeconomic standing.
Okay. Well, okay. See, this is a movie that, you know, spawns discussion. even though I have my issues with it, I by all means think people should see it and should see it on the big screen.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's just so gorgeous and so unexpected. You know, every thing about it is not the easiest, you know,
narrative
answer. You know what I mean? Like, you'll go see a film, and you'll always sort of know where it's going. You know,
exactly.
And the good movies in the world are the ones you don't know.
Yeah. Where you're like, I have no idea
what's coming next. You don't know what's going to happen to these people. And there's nothing typical. There's no cliche. There's nothing like that happening here. And I really love how it upsets, in a way, the idea, the story of post-World War II United States, where
the greatest generation.
The greatest generation came home, and they started making things, and Jackson Pollock started painting stuff, and you know, they built the suburbs, and everyone was producing, and everyone was, and the big story is that is what happened. But and with every big story, there are a million little stories on the side, and the people who wound up on the sidelines, all those fringe people, the losers and the drugs and the crazy people, they still made their way somehow.
Yeah.
And this is a movie about those people.
No, definitely. It's not unprecedented that kind of story has been told. I mean, if you go back to the 1950s, there's a Martin Ritt movie called No Down Payment.
Right.
That's all about GIs and former GIs and their wives in suburbia, you know, where like they have built all these new houses, and it's like, you know, if you were on the GI Bill, you could move in with no down payment, and it was all about like, you know, everything's going to be awesome now. And they've all got their problems, whether it's, you know, sexual or substance abuse or coping with, you know, life after wartime stuff. I mean, it hasn't all been the sort of the fakey version but you're right, with the fakey version we do get spoon fed a lot that it was.
Well, there's nothing fakey about it. It's just that was the dominant story.
Right, but you know what I'm saying? The all smiles narrative.
Yeah.
You know?
And so and I am really a huge fan now of the way that Paul Thomas Anderson has evolved as a filmmaker. I liked his earlier movies enough.
Mm-hmm.
They were energetic and there was a lot going on, but there will be blood in this one. This monumental sort of shift in direction and tone and style, and
I don't think this one is as effective as There Will Be Blood, but I think he's definitely moving the right
direction. Well, he's now a filmmaker that I'm excited about.
Mm-hmm.
Do you understand what I'm saying?
Sure.
Before I was like, oh, okay, there's another Paul Thomas Anderson coming out. You know, like, I was like, I'll go see that. Yeah. And
but now you're, yeah.
Now I ooh, what's he going to do next? Right. And
hey, pass me one of those.
Pass you one of what?
The trivets.
Oh, okay. To keep our laptops from melting into dust. We're in the middle of the nastiest heat wave in Los Angeles right now, where it was on our side of the hill, which never gets that hot. It was 105 degrees yesterday.
So in the valley, it had to have been like 110.
Your enthusiasm for life just dissipates.
Yes.
There's nothing. I my mood sours. Like I just.
I thought I was sinking into a pit of depression. I was like, no, it's just the weather.
It's just hot. Yeah. Anyway.
No.
Any final thoughts on the Master, Mark?
Or the heat wave.
Watching the movie, I was feeling that just tingle of excitement, and even at long stretches where they just seemed to be dialogue scenes, I was just it's the singer, not the song. You know that dialogue can be interminable if it goes on forever in someone else's movie, but here it just feels like something is going to happen,
right.
And it does, if not quite in the way you're expecting it. And you're absolutely right that you can't really get ahead of this movie. It doesn't go the direction that you would. It doesn't take the arc that you would expect this kind of story to take.
Yeah,
especially the way it's been sold to the public.
Yeah, I think if you're going into this expecting this like big expose of L. Ron Hubbard, you are not going to get that.
I wrote it's enough about Scientology to make John Travolta angry, but nobody else.
Yeah,
it's barely it has this religion or cult or whatever has things in common with Scientology. But it's not. I mean, it's not a story of Scientology.
It's the story of any faddish self-help movement where it basically boils down to you banging your head against the wall because it feels so great when you stop.
Yeah.
Yeah, like Leonard Maltin said, this could have just as easily been a movie about Amy Semple McPherson, basically. Yeah. Anyway, so also this week, the beating out the Disney reissue was Resident Evil Retribution.
It made more money than Finding Nemo 3D.
Yeah.
Well, you know what they didn't have in Finding Nemo 3D?
The Lion King.
That. They also didn't have zombies with tentacle mouths.
Mm.
And kids love those.
Yeah, oh yes.
So, who here saw that one except for me?
I haven't seen a single Resident Evil movie.
Me neither.
You're both useless to me right now.
But I love Mila Jovovich, and I would love to see her in tight spandex and leather. And
if you watch the first one, you get to see a tiny amount of full frontal from Miss Jovovich.
Okay.
In later installments, you get to see her battle clone versions of herself.
Yes, and then. In this one, she's nude except for a paper sheaf of something like a shift that they have her on in the interrogation cube, and so you know, and she's always wearing the underworld getup, you know, or is it Kate Beckinsale wearing the Resident Evil?
I think it's Kate Beckinsale wearing the Resident Evil because the whole. One franchise feeds off the other.
I would love to see Kate Beckinsale fight Mila Jovovich.
Well, love to see
to the death for real.
Well, okay, there's been 5 Resident Evil movies. In any of them, does Mila subdue the creatures by like pulling out a guitar and singing one of the beautiful songs? Because that would pacify me in an instant.
She does give them a makeover.
I would always want to see her win against Kate Beckinsale because I find her far more appealing than Kate Beckinsale.
That's not saying a whole lot.
It is. She's an accomplished lady. Not only has she been a musician and model, but also has recently been a fashion designer
as
well.
I'm saying
so many facets to Mila Jovovich.
To like someone more than Kate Beckinsale isn't saying much.
Oh, okay. I get it.
That's
now.
What I'm saying.
I understand now.
So tell us about Resident Evil : Retribution.
Well, she's still fighting the Umbrella Corporation
mm-hmm.
because that's what happens in the Resident Evil movies. I've seen all of them. All of them. And I have to go back each time and reread what I wrote about them, because I don't remember a thing about them moments after leaving the theater and finishing writing the review. Like, I gave passing thought this past week to, why don't I go back and watch all four of them so that I'm super fresh for number five? I didn't do that.
I thought you were going to say that you gave thought to rerunning one of your old reviews to see if anybody would notice.
Maybe nobody would notice. But I thought about watching them all, because I genuinely don't remember them.
Right. I think Bibbs did.
When I'm done, yes, he did. When I'm done watching one, I don't remember it. So either they're getting better, or I've just had my soul crushed by them. So that now, watching this new one, I'm kind of into it. It's still not a good movie. But there's, you know, fun stuff that happens. And, you know, according to Bibbs, I've never played any of the video games. According to Bibbs, there's nothing about it that's based on any of the video games. Although it is based on a Capcom video game.
Yes.
But it starts really cool. You know, there's this whole backwards scene that starts the movie where she's, on a battleship, and people are dying and being exploded by ships, and she's got her guns and she's pointing them at the space ships, but it's all backwards. And then she winds up in a white interrogation cube in Umbrella headquarters, but you don't know, is she really there or is she still fighting the ships? And then she wakes up again in another reality in suburbia where she's a wife and a mom with a little kid, and Michelle Rodriguez is her neighbor. And I prefer to believe that she's really always living in suburbia, because in that reality, she still has to fight the zombies, because they go where, no matter where she is, they go get her. Because they've got the virus, and, you know, she had the virus, but the virus gave her superpowers, but they took her superpowers away for this movie, and so she has to fight the zombies without the superpowers, and she has to go through all these different realities in these different containment zones that Umbrella has set up. She's trapped.
Okay, you're boring me.
And no, it's very exciting. In the suburbia environment, Michelle Rodriguez is her neighbor as Bizarro Rodriguez. She drives a Prius. She smiles. When she sees Mila Jovovich, she's like, "Hi!" And she runs up to her and, like, gives her a hug. And the look on Mila Jovovich's face is like, "Scary lady, I know who you are in the other reality, and you're a killer. You're Michelle Rodriguez."
Is it the same suburbia that Vernita Green lives in at the beginning of Kill Bill?
Kind of, yeah. And, you know, Michelle Rodriguez is like, "I campaigned against the NRA," and, you know, you presume she likes guys in this version of reality.
Bizarro.
And yeah, it's awesome. And then you also get real Michelle Rodriguez, the kind that you would meet if you were just walking down 3rd Street and she happened to be going to the Jones to get a bite to eat. She'd have a machine gun and a bulletproof vest on and wearing camo fatigues. I think that's how she is in real life every day, before getting into her, you know, Hummer and running over running over other automobiles to go home to wherever it is she lives. You get both versions of Michelle Rodriguez in this movie, in addition to the zombies, in addition to the giant monsters with the nails through their heads with these super axe sledgehammers, and in addition to another big monster that they meet in the Russia zone that eats this little kid, the kid from suburbia who's her daughter. Oh. And doesn't digest her, unfortunately. It would have been great if they had that on a loop. Because there's so much multiplicity going on in this version. You know, with, like, they wind up in a factory where there's, like, an assembly line of a million Mila Jovoviches and a million of the kid. And
do they play Powerhouse by Raymond Scott as they're making the million Milas?
This sounds like the first two seasons of Venture Brothers, where there's just all these tubes with spares, you know.
Yes, I wish that it had been that would have been awesome. But it's not. Okay, so this movie's crap, but I had a good time.
All righty.
The end, question mark, because there's a cliffhanger for Resident Evil
6?
Something, something, shin, yeah. Or whatever's going to come next.
Okay. Let's see. What else have you seen this weekend, Mark?
I'm getting a glass of water.
Okay.
Well, I caught up with Oogie Loves.
Oh, okay.
Tell us
any quick thoughts on that you want to
share? Oh, if I did not know the history on this movie, I would have sworn that this was some sort of Wondershosen blank-faced parody of a children's movie. No, I knew that it was this is real. This is happening.
Yes.
And there's this wonderful letter to the world that the screenwriter recently posted on Facebook, and it's a very nice letter, and I appreciate what he said, and I feel like picking on it would be being mean, so I'm laughing with the movie and not at it.
What was the screenwriter's defense?
Well, that he wrote it for 3-year-olds. Right. That it's of course it's going to look ridiculous to anybody who has functioning logic.
High 3-year-olds.
Still, but I mean, does he get into the idea that this is a movie that endorses like jumping out of tall trees with a balloon to float you to the ground, or drinking milkshakes really fast, or climbing into strangers' vehicles when they offer you a balloon at the windmill? I mean, it's like, I don't know. It just seems to me like, I don't know how this got
these
through.
Things do happen.
How that got through the filter, you know. Anyway, enough about the Oogie Loves.
No, you can never have enough about the Oogie
until the sequels, anyway. I saw Liberal Arts.
Who cares?
Well, I'm going to... Look, you went on for ages about Resident Evil.
Because it's exciting and necessary.
Give me a second.
And it's a wide release.
Give me a second on Liberal Arts. It's Josh Radner, who's on How I Met Your Mother, a show I have never watched, incidentally. It's his second film. He did something previously.
I don't even have a television.
No, I just have never seen this show. He previously directed a movie called Happy Thank You More Please, which was one word, and that alone was enough to keep me from wanting to see it. Anyway, so this one, he plays this like 30-ish college admissions officer in New York, and he goes back to his alma mater in the Midwest because a beloved professor is retiring, and he winds up sort of beginning this flirtation, almost romance, with a young college student played by Elizabeth Olsen. And it's just one of those movies where, like, you know, they begin this correspondence and they're talking about classical music, and they're talking about classical music in such a banal, cornball way that you're thinking, like, well, this is going to be a joke, right? The movie's going to call them on this. No.
Like the way Woody Allen characters talk about classical music.
Yeah, well, they do it in a pretentious
way. They do that in You'll Meet a Tall, Dark Stranger, and it's insufferable.
Right, well, here it's very kind of yippee gee whiz. And
she reminds me of a Mahler symphony. The most erotic person I've ever met in my life.
Yeah, so no, the he just doesn't know how people talk, or doesn't know how to make it not sound ridiculous in a movie. It's the kind of movie where, like, during the opening credits, you see a recognizable actor playing a role that seems thoroughly insignificant, so that you know that later in the film, that character is going to wind up being somebody who matters.
They're the killer. Yeah.
Basically, yeah.
Is there a killer in Liberal
There's
Arts?
Not a killer in Liberal Arts.
There probably should be a killer.
No, so you know that perhaps a love interest is going to pop up later, you know, from this seemingly inconsequential character played by character actor you know.
I think I had a better deal going to see Resident Evil.
I think maybe you did, yeah. So anyway, I was really left cold by this one. And then I also saw Finding Nemo 3D. Which is gorgeous. I mean, Finding Nemo has always been kind of one of my favorite Pixar movies anyway. I think it's really well written. I love the character voices in it. And I think the 3D really kind of enhances what the movie's doing because, you know, it's set 90% in the ocean. So, you know, if Werner Herzog is going to take us through a cave, you know, and use 3D to sort of show you how the cave goes way back, I think, you know, you get the same effect here with the deep blue sea, you know.
It does intrigue me.
What? No.
You've seen it without 3D.
Yes, I have. Yeah. I regret that I was very late to Finding Nemo. Like, I saw it long after everyone else had seen it, and I don't know why I had been not, you know, amped up sooner, and, you know, as soon as I got in there, within the first few minutes, it's like, oh, of course, what was I thinking?
Right.
Me of so little faith doubting Pixar.
Right.
You saw it late, too, as I recall.
Yeah, I did.
I remember taking you to see it like during the Oscar run
late
or something.
Late in the game when we saw it, or I saw it late.
I saw it before. Well, I'd seen it, but I saw it again with you. Anyway, I think it's a case where doing a 3D sort of post-conversion actually works. And you know, much better to do the digital Pixar stuff than to do the pop-up book versions of, like, Lion King and Beauty and the Beast that they've been doing, I think. There's a new Toy Story short attached called Partysaurus Rex. It's really funny, and it has Oonts, Oonts, Oonts music by BT in it, and it's fun. It's worth seeing.
I want to get like a 6-year-old and ask him, you know, how do you feel about this versus Cave of Forgotten Dreams?
You know? The kid will be like, "Well, like, it's no Pina, but you know."
The kid will be like, "How can you compare this to her song?" You just can't.
I would like to see a 6-year-old kid doing that whole dance hands move at the beginning of Pina, though. You know, the
Four Seasons.
And then we plant the seed. The ground grows the seed, and we eat the seed.
And then we poop on the ground, and that makes the seed grow, and it's the circle of life.
You poop on the ground.
You're looking like a fool with your pants on the ground.
I'm boycotting these 3D conversions and re-releases.
Well, you know,
I'll eat at Chick-fil-A and tongue kiss Phyllis Schlafly before I go see any of these.
I went because of work. I probably would not have under my own steam. But having gone, I have to say, it was, you know, it was nicely done. And if it's this seemed like a case where it was justified to do it. I don't think it always is. You know, who wants to see Star Wars episodes 1 through 3 again in any format, much less 3D? But
is that going to happen?
Is
number 2 coming soon in 3D?
Yeah, yeah, it is.
They're really all number 2. That's another story. And you know, I have to admit, I'll probably be taken in by curiosity about at least 4, maybe 4, 5, and 6. But 1 through 3, forget it.
I won't.
Yes, fine. And then also opening in limited release this weekend is an indie film called Blue Collar Boys. It's set in Jersey.
It's set in someone's basement rec room.
Oh my God, I saw that trailer at the Wembley when I saw Red Hook Summer, and I just thought, oh, this is for real.
Yeah, it's not very good. It's weird. I mean, it's a movie that means well, certainly, and it has similar production values to a lot of the Jesus-y movies I've seen in the last years, but this one, at least, its agenda is not so much about the Lord as about, you know, how the working class in this country gets screwed. And so certainly on that level, I applaud it, and I'm glad it exists.
Eerily predicts the Occupy movement,
yes,
says this one blurb.
Right.
No, it doesn't.
Not so much. No.
I watched very little of it, so I'm not here to review it. You watched it. But the Occupy movement, none of the dummies in this movie would make those connections, you know, I'm being exploited by giant corporations.
It's the kind of movie where, like, they throw out a lot of homophobic slurs and you're not sure.
I did notice
if
that
they were just being true to the
amusement
characters, or like that they just don't even see that that's an issue.
Oh, these guys are the heroes of this movie.
I know. It's not very well acted, and it's, you know, I sort of admire the message they're trying to put across, but it's not
the
done.
The really bright lighting and everything. No matter where they are, it's just like,
yeah, it's very ugly to look at. Like, nobody really bothered to sort of, you know, they used to call cinematographers lighting directors.
Yeah,
and nobody light directs this movie, unfortunately. Yeah.
It's the equivalent of going to someone's house where they've got giant fluorescent lights above you,
right,
in the house. Like, look at all this! It's as bright as a sunny day in here, you know. Yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, sadly, I don't think it really works, and I don't know what kind of theatrical life it's going to get, if it's going to go marching straight to DVD.
In Los Angeles, it has opened at the Lemley NoHo 7
in
the Valley.
It has indeed, yes.
So it's at an art house in the Valley. Does it have a distributor, or did it get, like, four-walled into that?
I suspect it was four-walled, but, you know.
Yeah, probably just...
But you were given the DVD to watch.
Yes.
And you watched it.
And I did.
And this is your review.
And this is my review.
The end.
Yes.
Blue Collar Boys. My favorite thing happens at the beginning when there's this voiceover. One of the guys is doing some voiceover, and he's like, "The working man can't get ahead," you know. Got calluses on my hands. I'm a working man. Dude, so am I. You know, I sit down and I type all day, but
bless.
I'm the working man too, you know.
All right, so anyway.
It's so that not
was,
good.
So that was that.
At all.
Are we doing more listener mail today, or are we...
Are we talking about 10 years?
Oh, right, 10 years, I forgot.
10 years.
10 years.
High school reunion movie.
Yes, also in limited release.
In very limited release. It's on a handful of screens mm-hmm. across the country, so you're probably going to get a chance to see it on cable DVD. Or DVD.
Yeah, Anchor Bay is putting it out, so...
Sure. Why it didn't get a bigger release is sort of confusing to me, because it's not a bad movie at all. It's I liked it a lot, in fact. It's a comedy, but it's not a forced, sort of pushy comedy full of wacky antics like American Reunion was earlier in the year, and that was, you know, garbage movie.
This is character-based.
This is character-based. It feels half-written, sort of half-improvised. It's got a million people in it. Channing Tatum, his wife, whatever her name is, Tatum.
Jenna something Tatum.
At, Aubrey Plaza and Chris Pratt from Parks and Rec. It's got...
Ari Grainer.
Brian Garrity, Ari Grainer, Oscar Isaac, Justin Long, Max Minghella, Kate Mara, Lynn Collins, who was in...
the female preacher?
You better think. a different...
We actually made that joke when we reviewed John Carter.
John Carter. It's just from John Carter. It's... It allows what I like the most about it is that it seems to me like the kind of movie where the director allowed the actors to sort of do what they wanted mm-hmm. and to come up with their own, like they had a rough sort of outline, I think, maybe for the, I'm just speculating, this is what it felt like from watching it,
like a Mike Lee kind
that
of thing.
There was a, yeah, like a Mike Lee sort of thing where like, here's what I want you to do, here's what I want you to, here's where I want you to go. Now go there.
Yeah, here's your end point, go. Yeah.
And so there's, you know, funny stuff, but there's also a lot of room for dramatic moments. There are a lot of storylines happening all at once in a sort of Robert Altman way. I mean, it's not a Robert Altman movie, but it doesn't approach, you know,
that level of
competency, but it's not an incompetent movie by any right. means. Great performances, particularly from Chris Pratt and Ari Grainer as the high school popular kids who got married, and they should have their own movie. Like there's enough, you know, fuming, simmering resentment going on between those two. To make its own
Gen Y Virginia,
yeah,
Wolf.
Gen Y Cassavetes sort of thing, and no, I liked it a lot. You're probably not in a town where it's playing, but see it when you get a chance. It's not bad at all.
I'm glad to hear that. I saw the trailer and it. I just
the trailer and the marketing is all over the place. It's very like, who got hot? Who got fat? Who's the party girl now? You know, like all this stupid. It's not about any of that. Yeah, and
that's a great relief.
Yeah, it's much better than they're allowing you to believe it is from the way they're trying to sell it.
All righty then.
Is that it? Is that all for the movie?
That's it.
That's every movie.
That's every
that
movie
we've got this week.
Yeah.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
Well, none of us drove out to see Stolen or Bates. So.
That's true. That's true. All right, I got some. I got some mail.
Okay.
Some joker named Kurt Holman.
Friend of the show, guest of the show.
College roommate of Alonzo Duralde.
That too.
Yeah.
And film critic, Atlanta-based film critic.
I was part of a Paste magazine poll for the best films of the 1990s. Mm-hmm. And I thought I would send my top 10 to you guys, since you're reading other people's lists. I repeat, this is just my favorite films of the 1990s, not of all time.
Okay.
The Wrong Trousers.
Mm-hmm, sure, yeah.
Goodfellas.
Definitely.
Rushmore.
Definitely.
Election.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Heavenly Creatures.
Yes.
Fight Club.
Mm-hmm. Sure, okay.
Groundhog Day.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Trainspotting.
Okay.
Burnt by the Sun.
Didn't see it.
Didn't see it.
The Sweet Hereafter. Keep on knifing, comma, Kurt.
Sweet Hereafter, not my favorite Ogoyan, but there's good stuff in it.
Remind me what Burnt by the Sun is.
Nikita Mikhalkov.
I did not see that film.
Yeah.
I could live without... The Sweet Hereafter.
It's... Yeah.
If I'm going to pick an Adam Ogoyan movie from that time, I'd go with The Adjuster.
Yes, totally The Adjuster.
That's a creepy
I love that movie. And I love any movie where, like, in the last 30 seconds,
it's
I
called go, The Adjuster. The Adjuster. It's about an insurance adjuster.
Yeah, with stars Elias Koteas.
Yeah.
It's one of those movies where in the last 30 seconds I go, oh! And, like, the whole, like, it makes me completely, it reshapes my entire thought of what the whole rest of the movie had been about.
Right.
Yeah. But... I would say for the 90s, that would be 95%
knife. 95%
knife.
My three movies from the 90s that are indispensable that should be on this list. Kurt Hohman.
What?
Safe.
Okay.
Crash.
Yeah.
Gummo.
No.
I'm right.
No. Just say no to Gummo.
What about you, Mr. Hoyt?
Oh, well,
the 90s.
I did do like a 90s list. I mean, mine was, you know, kind of much more conventional than Holman's. I mean, the typical suspects are on it, Pulp Fiction, JFK. I had Blair Witch Project on there, you know, in terms of socio
influence.
But I think, well, first off, my single best movie of the decade of the 90s would be Hoop Dreams.
Sure. Yeah.
Simply because there are so many things that spring from that movie that movie made possible. Low budget digital filming. Reality-based storytelling, the documentary as a viable entertainment medium.
Right. Well, you could argue that Roger and Me kind of opened that door.
Well,
as far as documentaries being a widespread phenomenon and released to a mass audience.
Well, Roger and Me, though, I would use is an anomaly because that was sold off of the moxie of Michael Moore, because Michael Moore was on, you know, talk shows selling his character, you know,
sure.
that just like Spike Lee was, you know, doing Nike commercials, got hit, you know, so
right. Yeah.
people just were intrigued by this person. Yeah, Hoop Dreams had to sell itself by its story.
Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying, I mean, obviously Hoop Dreams is a gajillion times better as a documentary than Roger and Me, but I'm saying you have to remember, before Roger and Me, the notion of getting a documentary, you know, into theaters and released by a major or even the indie arm of a major was very rare. You know, you had like movies like Sherman's March or whatever mm-hmm. were very much indie affairs. Where
right.
like Warner Brothers put out, you know, Roger and Me. Was it Fine Line put out Hoop Dreams?
Yeah.
You know, so it was a division of Warner Brothers. I mean, like that was I think a tipping point as far as docs getting that kind of attention. But no, otherwise you're right. I think and it's definitely an influential film and it's a great film. The one that I would add maybe is Henry and June. I think a movie doesn't get enough. Respect. It's sort of this historical footnote for being the first NC-17 film, but I think it's a really rich film and really smart and erotic and deals with female sexuality in a way that a lot of movies don't or are afraid to, I think.
Whatever.
but my list would also definitely have Goodfellas and Rushmore and Heavenly Creatures on it as well. So
now for two letters
okay.
that are not lists.
Okay.
From Wendy, it says, Panda, go Panda, go Panda. Not that I have anything to say, just thought I would sing it you because you have implied that I'm a good parent. Yay, I'm a good parent. Wendy.
Our pleasure, Wendy.
When we mentioned Panda, go Panda
yes.
once. From Ryan, this is a friend of ours who writes about film here in Los Angeles, Ryan Downey.
Oh, of MTV movies, yes.
Of MTV movies. listening to you guys talk about Andy Jones, I'm reminded of the time I sat with him at A Man Apart, a dusty Vin Diesel movie dumped by New Line at the height of his popularity. And Andy was subsequently banned from New Line screenings after his outside voice laughing and heckling during the serious parts. I always felt bad because I egged him on every time, but I was much more quiet. He would subsequently sass me about it every time I saw him after. Ha ha ha, rest in peace. Like, any person that ever sat next to Andy Jones in any screening has a story about how Andy Jones behaved during that screening.
Have you told the glitter story?
I told it on this podcast.
Oh, okay. I couldn't remember.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Here's another list. Wait a second. Sorry. From Lily Jackson. Another loyal female listener here. I really dig your podcast. The Bickerson's banter cracks me up. Your accounts of your daily life make me nostalgic for the years I lived in Los Angeles in the mid to late 90s. Double bills at the New Beverly, brunch at Farmer's Market. Sigh. Here was a list.
Did you have air conditioning?
Yeah. Today's not going to be a good memory for this apartment. It's 1,000 degrees. Here's a list. Not of films I necessarily believe are the best of all time, but of movies I rewatch compulsively in no particular order. She's got four Coen movies: Big Lebowski, Fargo, Miller's Crossing, Raising Arizona, Alexander Payne, an Alexander Payne triple shot, Election, Citizen Ruth, Sideways, The Conversation, Network, The Apartment, All About Eve, The Women, Sweet Smell of Success, Night of the Hunter, Cold Comfort Farm, Ghost World, A Room with a View, Boogie Nights, L.A. Confidential, she's going way over the 10, doesn't matter, Jaws, Woody Allen block of Annie Hall, Hannah and Her Sisters, Husbands and Wives, Radio Days, Blade Runner / Alien, Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan.
Well,
you are the most knife of all the knife because you listed 37 films.
Yes, and there are a few that
are all good.
I could pick a few minor nits in there, but for the most part, yeah, that's a fine list.
She doesn't believe that they are necessarily the best of all time.
Right, no, I know.
She just wants to watch them again and again.
Yes.
I mean, really, is The Poseidon Adventure one of the greatest films of all time? No, it is not.
Do you want to watch it over and
over? Do I want to watch it every day? Sure. Have I seen it 40-something times? Yes. Yeah. From the moment it was released until now. Am I going to go to the Egyptian this December when they do the 40-something anniversary screening of the film with cast and whatnot? Yes, I am.
Nowhere is your brain sensitivity thinner.
Exactly.
I know.
It's my my skull is only one inch thick of lead, and you can bust out of it to reach safety.
I will see Clue by the time I'm dead more times than I will ever see The Seven Samurai. You know, it's not a judgment about it being good or not. It's just it's comforting.
Thank you, Lily, for being an awesome, loyal
listener
and female listener. And that's it. It is 5 till 2. We have to stop. We got to go to this going away party. Things are happening.
DVD picks.
Hey.
Go, Mr. Hoyk. What is your DVD pick?
My DVD pick, since everyone is hooping about the Criterion release of Rosemary's Baby, I want to alert people to the forgotten Roman Polanski film, A Day at the Beach, which he was supposed to direct, but when the Sharon Tate murder occurred, he couldn't bring himself to do it, and he gave his screenplay to Simon Hissera to direct. Paramount made the film and buried it. My friends at Code Red DVD released it. They are going to be losing the rights soon, but they have plenty of copies left. You can go direct to their website at coderedDVD.bigcartel.com.
Oh.
They have it priced so ridiculously, it's like Crazy Eddie. I can't talk about it in public. It's insane. But it's A Day at the Beach is no day at the beach. It's a rather bleak film about an alcoholic taking his niece, possibly his daughter, out for a day in the middle of a rainstorm to the beach, but it's basically one long drunken bacchanal. It's based on a novel by Hiersma, which got remade by Theo van Gogh in the 90s, and it's a really intriguing film and deserves to be seen by more people. And there's a cameo by Peter Sellers.
And while you're at the Code Red website, pick up a copy of Caged Men, featuring a commentary track by Dave White.
You don't need to do that. I mean, like, we are... It can only be really sort of generously called a commentary. We turn the movie on.
And talk.
And we talk about whatever we feel like talking about. Sometimes we're talking about what's happening in the movie. Sometimes we're not talking about what's happening in the movie.
If you like this program, you will probably like our commentary.
We should never be allowed to do any more commentaries on DVDs again.
Speak for yourself. I thought we were trying.
I agree with me.
What's your DVD pick?
Well, I have two.
Okay.
I discussed this on the B-Movies podcast earlier this week, but if you know, maybe you didn't listen to that. Bresson's The Devil probably comes out in the United States on DVD on Tuesday. A movie about a guy that kills himself.
Yes, and you discussed it at aching length last time, so do not go through
it. After seeing it at the retrospective, I talked about it for more time than you wanted me to talk about it.
Yes.
Even though I could have talked more.
I'm sure you could have. Could have danced all night.
Because it's so great. The other movie that's coming out on DVD this week from Strand is a Norwegian film that came out earlier this year called Oslo, August 31st. It's about a guy who commits suicide.
So there's a trend here.
So the suicide double feature. I recommend watching them back to back while in a very good mood with a lot of candy.
Keep a loved one's phone number handy, I think.
No, these are not the movies that will make you want to kill yourself.
Didn't they ban The Devil Probably in France?
Because okay.
They encouraged young men.
They banned The Devil Probably in France because they thought it would cause an epidemic of teen suicide.
Yes. Teenage suicide.
But it didn't.
Don't do it.
Do it.
Both of these movies are so great. Don't think, oh, I don't want to watch a movie about people who kill themselves. You do want to watch a movie about people who kill themselves. Because they're awesome.
My DVD pick this week is the Blu-ray release of Halloween 2, which is the first like R-rated horror movie that I saw in a movie theater when I was 15 years old. And
did you see it before the original Halloween?
No, I had seen... Well, I saw Halloween on NBC, so it was a little bit edited. God. I know. I was a kid. I couldn't get into movie theaters. It's not like these kids today have access to everything on the cable and on the internet. I had to piece it together as best I could. But it was great. I saw it with an audience at Greenbrier Mall in East Point, Georgia.
Nice.
They tended to be a vocal audience during horror films. My favorite part being the couple is making out in the therapeutic hot tub in the hospital. Michael Myers turns the temperature way, way up. So the guy gets out to fix it and he's being strangled in the background while the girl's just sitting there like a ditz. And a woman near me yells out, "Honey, he died now. You ain't gonna get no orgasm." The other good part was that I was just getting over a cold and I had no voice, so whenever I got scared of the movie, I went,
ah. Anyway. How old are you?
15.
Of course.
Yeah. Anyway, so Halloween 2 out this week on Blu-ray, as is Halloween 3, Season of the Witch.
Season of the Witch.
A movie which I contend, we talked about this on the B-Movies podcast, the perfect movie to remake because people remember it fondly and it has some cool ideas in it, but it's a terrible film.
No, it's fun. It's a fun movie.
The things that are fun and are smart really are fun and smart, but
yes.
You have to sit through a lot of bleh to get there.
Man. If they remake it, how is he going to call 500 cable channels?
Yeah, how?
They'll figure. He'll text them. I don't know. They can deal with that one. All right, well, as always, folks, we thank you for listening. Mr. Hoik, Mark Edward Hoik, we thank you for joining us this week on the show.
Thank you for having me. It's
was
been an honor.
Our pleasure. We appreciate your support throughout the years, and again, check out his blog, The Projector Has Been Drinking.
If it weren't for this man, I would have never seen the apple.
That's true. We have you to thank for the apple. He brought that into our lives. The midnight screening at the New Art, Valentine's Day of 2003.
It changed my life.
Forever, yes. No question. I want to point you, of course, to our friends in the podcast universe, The Comedy Couch with Dennis Hensley and Tony Tripoli, Cooking with Malcolm Ingram, Fat Guys of the Movies, The Criterion Cast, Throwing Shade, Team Jack, The Schmoes Know, The B-Movies Podcast, which, again, Dave and I have guested on this week, so check it out, Film Spotting SVU, Pod Crash with that Chris Gore, The Game Night Guys, and Secretly Timid. You can subscribe to this show on iTunes, and if you would leave us a review there, we would love that. It helps people find the show. You can also stream this program on Stitcher Radio and at thelounge.com. Like our Facebook page, follow us on Twitter at LinoleumCast, check into the show at getglue.com, and drop us a line with your top 10 list, questions, comments, or anything else you want to let us know at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com.
Is that it?
That's it.
Okay, goodbye.